and welcome in again to the Worship Life Podcast with Mike Harland. I am your co-host, Brian Brown. As always, Mike, we are in the beautiful B.B. McKinney Studios.
It's amazing,
isn't it? High atop the Lifeway Tower.
Historic.
It is. These are historic studios.
You know, Brian, I've been speaking at a lot of conferences this year.
Right.
I think that's probably because of the book. People thought
Worship
got a book,
and
maybe
he
has something to say. So,
correct.
But I have. I've been everywhere speaking this spring, and everywhere I go, people will come up and say something about the historic B.B. McKinney.
B.B. McKinney Studios. Well, they need to come visit us.
They need to come
here
visit
at One Lifeway
so
Plaza.
So you have created
in Nashville, Tennessee.
You've created something.
And once they get here, I think they're going to be even more impressed by the beauty and the majesty.
The opulent.
Of the opulent. It's a little bit opulent, but I think
historic.
B.B. deserves that.
What are the other terms you've used?
I've forgotten, but I'm sure they were quite descriptive
yes.
of the opulent surroundings.
I'm sure they were.
That we find ourselves in. But Mike, we're not here today to talk about the B.B. McKinney Studios.
We're not.
As much as I love to,
yeah.
we have a special guest.
And you know what? As
today.
Is our custom, every
yeah.
once in a while, somebody walks through the doors here and we go, we got to get a podcast with this
Absolutely.
Guy.
Absolutely.
And we had one of those today. My good friend, legendary.
Mm.
And I say
Come
that.
On.
I'm not, you know, he thinks I'm kidding right now. I'm not kidding. Legendary songwriter.
Amen.
At least that's what he said.
Right.
But anyway,
in the bio
legendary
that he sent us,
song.
Yes.
And what's really funny about this, Brian, is there are many, many mutual friends that me and this guy have.
Right.
And for years, people would tell me that I remind them of him.
Wow.
And I found out, and wow. do you guys know each other? Well, at that point, we didn't. I knew who he was. We'd never met. And I found out years later that some of those people were telling him the same thing. So apparently,
wow.
there are people out there that think me and this guy are alike. And I
yeah.
take that.
I don't know who
at
should
least
be more
today,
offended. Yeah.
At least today, I take that as a compliment.
Okay.
But there are some days when I wonder if that.
Sure.
What the, but anyway,
sure.
the great legendary songwriter, Mr. Dave Clark.
Dave
Welcome.
Clark. Welcome, Dave.
Welcome, Dave Clark.
It is good to be in this amazing studio that,
yes.
that I have heard so much about. It's,
yes.
it's underwhelming
at most. Perhaps we set the
so,
expectations
but, you
too
know,
high.
You're not that Dave Clark guy that did the New Year's Eve thing. I mean, who are you?
No. Nor am I the Dave Clark of the Dave Clark Five.
No, you're not. Where are the other four? That's
impressive.
The question.
But somebody just sent me recently, just like a month ago, a friend of Cliff Duren's mm-hmm. sent me a framed picture of that band with the name Dave Clark Five on the kick drum. And, and my wife said, what are we to do with this?
Because you're not in there.
And she's not old enough to remember the group.
So yeah. Dave, you and I have become great friends. We do
good.
A lot of yes. stuff together.
Some of it's productive.
We've written songs together, musicals together. We have taught a class at Liberty University together. We make records together like we're doing this week, as
Sweet.
A matter of fact, working on a project for Day Wind that you're part of and I help write. So it just seems like we have our paths have intersected, and I'm so glad they did.
I am too.
And
it's about time.
Yeah, it's about time. And now we've grown a fast friendship. And, you know, me and you and Cliff, the three of us have become kind of a writing team
yes.
for several projects and talking about even more things that we could do. And, man, I just love it those days when me and you and Cliff get around a piano and one of us knows how to play that thing. and something happens when the three of us get around and try to make up a song. That's just pretty special.
Yes. And I've told people the story about the last project that we did, that we booked 3 days to write an entire musical, which was pretty ambitious.
Yes.
And we got there at 10 o'clock the first day, left at dinner time, met back the next day at 10 o'clock. And by noon on the second day, we looked at each other and said, we're done.
Wow.
Yeah, we'd already written it.
That's unbelievable.
And you listened to it, and obviously God was all over it.
Yeah.
I mean, in the room. And we there's a little room in Nashville that we work in, a chapel.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just feel like that it's so much not about us at that point.
Well, what we're going to talk about with Dave today, I mean, we could chase a lot of rabbits, but before we chase the rabbit we are going to chase,
yeah.
I'm going to embarrass him a little bit.
Yeah.
And the difference between me and him is he has about 28 number one hits on his
hands,
I have like 27 less than that.
Yes, so slightly fewer.
Just slightly fewer. We are Dove Award winners though.
That's
and
right.
The Dove Award that Dave won recently that was a project that I co-wrote with him, so we both won a Dove at the same time.
And you were there to
accept
it.
I was there. I actually gave your acceptance speech.
I was home working.
Yes, you
were.
One of us has to work. But anyway, Dave, you've written so many songs, and just many of our audience will know your name as a songwriter. If they look at songwriter names, they've seen your name a lot of times. But I just think for those that may not know, I would love for them to know a few of the titles that have come through your brain, which really speaks to the amazing power of our God.
That he can do this.
Amen. But I'm going to give you some of my favorites. How about Crucified with Christ?
Yeah.
This group, Phillips, Craig, and Dean.
They're going to do okay.
And what a great song. I have wept listening to that song. And amazing. So that's one that comes to mind quickly. I tell you another one that I think of. Right away when I think of your songs, I think of Strange Way to Save the World.
Yeah.
For Him, of course, Mark Harris, part of that. And then recently, Rascal Flatts. You got to go to the Country Music Christmas special while they sang that?
I watched it on TV. I did not go.
Oh, you didn't go?
I'm just... Those kind of moments when they come, and you know me well enough to know my story. I moved here when I was 17 by myself. And all I wanted to do from the time I was a kid was write.
Yeah.
And when those moments come, last Saturday night, in fact, I think I told you yesterday, we sat in my wife and I sat in a rest area and listened to the Grand Ole Opry live to hear one of my songs that could have gone to the Opry that night. And it was just one of those moments. She and I just looked at each other and I don't get it. I don't understand it. But I've done it long enough, and I'm old enough to appreciate every one of those moments.
Yeah. So would we be out of school today if we told them about that song that had the Opry on its feet? Because very soon the world's going to hear this song.
We hope it's a
it's pretty good story. Let's see if we can get a Worship Life podcast scoop,
an exclusive.
We're actually going to call out a song title that's not even released yet.
I like it.
And
well,
then
depending
later,
on when this airs,
if this song is doing what could happen here, we could say you heard it here first, folks. So tell us about this special song that's on its way.
The story, real quick, if we got time to tell
the
story.
Do it.
It was about a year ago in January. I was watching the news one morning, and there was a story that was going around during that time. And I always tell writers, if I get to talk to them, I'm not that smart, and you can verify that. I could get a whole list of people who would say that I'm not that brilliant. But what I have always had that I feel like is a gift from God that I have worked to develop is an awareness of what moves me. And so when I hear something, sometimes it's in a class that you're teaching, and if something moves me, I know that, and I trust that, and I pursue it relentlessly.
Yeah.
So this morning in January, about a year ago, a little over a year ago, there was a story going around the news about a teacher in Fresno, California, a high school teacher, and he was putting down the military, and he was saying things like, the military only takes people who aren't smart enough to make it in the real world, and it's just things that went against everything. And so a lot of the news people were talking about it. And so I walked in, and halfway through an interview on one of the morning news shows, and they were talking about this story, and it had a lady talking, and it said military mom at the bottom of the screen. So I wanted to hear what she had to say, and she caught me off guard because her answer was so gracious when they said, what does that make you feel like when you hear things like that? And I know what I probably would have said if it had been my son.
Yeah.
And she said, sometimes people, when they don't have all the information, they say things they wouldn't say normally.
Yeah.
And I was so moved by
that
how gracious it was. So now I stop. And they said, the next question to her was, what would you say to this teacher if you could talk to him? Well, now the writer in me is on go, where I'm reaching for
the
pencil.
You're ready to say, okay, what's this going to be?
But even then, I wasn't ready for her response. She said, I've reached out to him, and I've just asked him, hey, meet me at Arlington. Let me introduce you to my son. And
yeah, I'm getting chill bumps listening to that now.
It was such a, I was so moved by it.
Yeah.
And then the writer in me goes, well, 6 million other people just heard that same idea. And it's not a, this is commercial. It was, this moved me, yeah. And I trusted it. So I called, I happened to live next door to a guy named Jimmy Fortune.
Yeah.
I called Jimmy. And
Statler Brothers, for all of you that don't know that by name, he was the lead singer of the Statlers for a long time.
And he wrote songs like Elizabeth, and he wrote More Than Just a Name on the Wall. Mm-hmm. And I said, Jimmy, you're not going to believe what I just saw in the news. And he said, oh, Dave, can we write that? I said, can we write it Friday? He said, I leave town tomorrow. I said, I'll be over tonight. So we went over, wrote the song in about an hour, but it's years. Both of us have done it enough years. And we demoed it the next morning, and it has sat there for a year, a little over a year. We knew something would happen. We didn't know what. Jimmy just recorded a new CD on the Gaither label, and it's called God and Country. Hmm. And it releases this Friday. And that song is kind of been the focus of it up to this point.
Wow.
And the thing that I love about the song, he sings with so much passion.
Mm.
But
great
when you
singer.
Hear him sing it,
yeah.
You'll feel exactly what you felt when I just told you the story.
Yeah.
So that's, as a writer, you know as well as I do, you write what you feel like God tells you to write. And then if you try to stress over all the things that happened past it,
right.
You'll go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell writers too, I say, write the song, let God decide where it goes. The analogy I've used recently with songwriters, and you and I haven't talked about this, but I've said this recently more than once, and I've noticed some of the kids, as I say this to them, I almost see a light bulb coming on in their head, and I'm very grateful. Maybe I have stumbled onto a metaphor that they get. But I always tell them, because most writers, inexperienced writers, will spend way too much energy worrying about where the song will go.
Right.
Instead of making the song great.
Just write the song.
Just write. So here's the analogy I use. I say, you know what? You're building a kite. Make sure the kite is great. Make the kite great and focus on the tail and the shape of it and make sure that every part of it is catching the wind. And all. You're riding a kite and you're making a kite. And when the kite is built well, all you have to do then is run.
Yeah.
All you have to do is
love
run.
That. Never have heard that.
Just run with the, build the kite and run with it. And
I tell people that when the student's ready, the teacher appears.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that either, but yes, write the great song.
Yeah. And run with it. And watch
we worry about charts and we worry about all those things. And yes, we've been blessed to get some radio through the years, but songs like Strange Way to Save the World was never a number one song.
Yeah.
Well, if our only measure was what was number one on the charts, I'd count to more misses than wins.
Yeah, sure.
Well, we want to talk, Mike, with Dave, particularly. A lot of churches, worship teams are writing their own songs and their music these days. And I really want to pick Dave's brain about what he thinks about the current state of the song that the church is singing and maybe what advice he might have for some of these young songwriters who are writing songs specifically for the worship experience. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back to pick Dave Clark's brain about songwriting specifically for the worship congregation. Hey, this is Brian Brown, and I wanted to remind everyone out there that Lifeway is your one-stop shop for all church supplies. Broadman Church Supplies, you can find them at lifeway.com, or you can find them by calling us. Guys, this is everything from offering envelopes to different kind of bulletins that you might need for special seasons of the year, all of your communion resources, including the pre-filled cup that has the wafer and the cup in one unit, which is great for when you're doing your communion or Lord's Supper services off site, or if you just have a large congregation. It's just a great way to serve communion in a really effective way. If you haven't tried the pre-filled cups, I highly recommend that you check that out. We also have the silver and the gold and the platinum serving sets for those of you in a more formal kinds of a setting. You can just find every resource for church, your forms, your offering envelopes, everything that you need, usher badges, anything you can imagine. Broadman Supplies have it, and you can find it by going to lifeway.com and searching for Broadman Church Supplies. Thanks. All right. Well, we're back with Dave Clark and Mike Harlan. We're talking about songwriting. And guys, I wanted to just take a turn and focus. We've been talking about some of the great songs that Dave has written. And I wanted to take a focus back to the church specifically and songs being written for the church. A lot of our listeners out there, seems more and more every day, churches are writing their own music for worship. And I'd just love to hear you guys talk about your thoughts about that and the song that the church is singing today and the way that song is born and maybe some advice you might have for some of these
songwriters. I totally agree, Brian, that more than ever, churches are discovering the creative process, and they are very often churches are developing their own writing communities, and some of these people are on staff.
Senior pastors are looking for it. I want a guy that can write.
And we want songs written, that are indigenous to our fellowship and our body of believers, and we'll write our own songs. And there's some things to like about that, but there's some other things about that that are interesting to talk about. Dave, I know you've seen the same thing, and we've talked about it before. So let's assume that in our audience today are people that are writing their own songs for the use of worship in their place where they live and where they worship and where they lead. So what do we want to say to them today about that process, about writing songs and about this idea that you should be writing what your church is singing?
You want me to go for
go,
it?
Go
want
for
me to
it.
Say what's on my mind?
Don't hold back. All right. Don't hold back.
All right. You know what? First of all, it's been many, many years ago. We sat, another writer and myself, sat with a guy named Dr. Vernon Whaley.
Mm-hmm.
Over at Liberty University.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
You might have heard of him. If you haven't, you should.
I have, yeah.
He had a vision.
By the way, he's probably listening to this podcast, so be careful what you say.
It would do Vernon well to listen to what you and I have to offer.
Yes.
But he talked about a vision that he had where writers would write for their own church. And it was so many years ago, and we sat there and we wanted to write a curricula around that for a new worship program that he dreamed of at Liberty. And I believed in him, but I didn't necessarily believe in that concept yet because it was so far ahead of its time.
Yeah.
And we sat there that weekend and began to talk what that could look like. Now that seems obvious.
Yeah.
But back then, I couldn't see how that would work. And then I remember... several years ago, we were singing at my church, like every other church in the world was singing Shout to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going home that day and thinking, how does a group of writers at a church in Australia write something for their church? And somehow we did it at my church. How did it get here?
Yeah.
I'm analytical enough.
Path?
I want to know what.
Yeah.
And so I called the publisher at Hillsong. I had a question. I wanted to ask him how did, and his take on it was fascinating. Do I believe in that? Absolutely. I want more and more writers to write for the church. Here's my issue with it.
Go.
And I know I'll sound like a bit of a curmudgeon, and it's okay. I wish there were more writers out there, but I wish they would write with the intent that their church might be the one that Australia is going to be singing. And I think if we're writing with that in mind, we're writing with a single focus of what real worship is. You and I have talked about how I believe that songs should appeal emotionally and intellectually.
Sure.
And I think that the song has a greater chance of getting to that next place. But my pet peeve is I hear a lot of songs that real singable choruses, and I look around and nobody's singing the verses, and we don't know why. It's because they had a singable chorus, but they didn't craft the verse.
Yeah.
And I think we can have both.
Well, here's an observation I want to make and just let you comment on it. Back in the day, for that song to get from Australia to Goodlettsville or wherever you were when you sang it, it had to be pretty awesome.
Absolutely.
I mean, it went through a lot of steps, and it's kind of like the impact of what a riverbed that's got rocks all in it. Some of the purest water you'll ever see is the water at the end of a stream that has gone down a path of rocks. And every every cubic foot of movement of that water that moves across the barriers to it, that water is getting purer and purer and purer until finally at the end of the stream it becomes this beautiful crystal water. Well, songs used to have to go through a process like that.
Yes.
The A&R director in the Nashville label had to hear a whole batch of songs, and a song had to stand out from maybe 20 others. And then it got onto a hold list with that had 15, of which 10 were going to be selected. So it had to make it through that. And then it had to get, it got finally got on a record. And then the radio people had to hear that record and pick it off of that deal. And so it's like six or seven steps before the church ever heard it.
Right.
Now the path is my office. I can literally write the song in my office and walk down the hall onto the platform of my church and sing it. Yeah.
And but then when
it doesn't have to be great to be sung.
Yes, yeah. we have lowered the standard of what's acceptable, and that, and so you go in churches, and again I'm laying it all out here.
But, lay it out there.
But you go into churches, and they've got the lyrics are on the screen, and they break at a place where it doesn't break musically, and it's because you can't look at it and tell where it's not crafted well enough that there's an obvious break. So the person putting the lyrics on the screen
has no idea. And they can't do it.
You know, you've used that word a couple times, Dave, craft, and I think it's so important for songwriters to think about it that way. And Mike used the illustration of building a kite. This is something that takes time. This is some, whatever gift you've been given, there are certain things that have to be learned. You have to work. You have to develop that gift. I read an article just recently, and I cannot remember. In the world of Google, you can find it. If it was the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. And the title of the article was Why Follow Your Passion is Such Bad Advice. The reason that the article writer thinks that's bad advice is new research that just shows that human beings are really, really bad at almost anything when we first try it.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's this generation of today that doesn't stick with anything long enough to find out if they have a passion for it.
Right.
They try it. They're not good at it. They feel like that's not their giftedness. They move on. The worship leader in the church, almost the complete opposite, you know, of that. But being dedicated to work at the craft, even if you feel called to it, even if you know God has gifted you for it. You know, I still remember young Jesus in the temple, right, talking to the spiritual leaders. I mean, and he grew in wisdom. He grew in stature, the scriptures say. He grew in wisdom, and I was not there, Dave, and stature and in favor with God. So there's this
even Jesus was growing.
There's this kind of thing where we're going to have to work at it. And I think there's an expectation of that.
I want to ask Mr. Clark a really pointed question.
Yeah.
So can you teach someone how to write a song, a great song?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But what you can't teach them to do, what you cannot teach them to do, is to think like a songwriter.
Yeah,
I think you can teach somebody rhyme schemes.
Sure.
You can teach them structure. I think we got to have structure. We got to have theology. We got to have all those things. You can learn theology. You can learn structure, but I can't teach you passion.
Yeah,
yeah,
and I feel like, you know, again, we have said, hey, that worked at my church on Sunday, and I want to know, would it work at my church on Sunday?
Yeah.
And I'm also, I'm not convinced, when we were starting to write songs, we wrote with the goal that they would still be singing that song in 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that young writers think that way anymore. And I'm not sure I'm not saying it's wrong.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's different from what
you know,
we grew up with.
There's no question that the nature of many, many, many of our current worship songs that churches are writing and that churches are singing don't have longevity. And one of the reasons they probably don't have longevity is they become very trite. They go back to the same themes over and over and over again, using even some of the same words.
Yep.
You begin to hear these power words that come out, and then they start showing up in everybody else's song. And musically speaking, the songs have a sameness about them that make them not memorable.
Right.
And I think church practice is proving this out, because now churches move on from songs at an alarming rate.
Yes.
And they don't, the chances that 5 years from now, many of the songs the church is singing right now, they won't be singing five years from now, because they're not memorable enough to matter that long.
I totally agree. And you, I called our worship leader a few months back, and I said, hey, Am I right that that song you led this morning only had four notes in it total? And he said, huh. Yeah. And again, I wasn't putting it down. I'm trying to understand. I want to be relevant to this generation.
So you talk about being pithy. I'm going to throw one at you. I mean, here we are. These are the, you know, those two old guys in the Muppets that are up in the balcony? That's what me and Dave are right
grumpy
now.
Old songwriter.
That's what we ought to call this.
Nice.
But let me throw this out there. And I mean this with all the love in my heart. Yesterday's great hymns and songs were written by musicians. Today's songs are written by songwriters that may or may not be that developed musically to even be able to
and
create a structure.
And yesterday's hymns were written, it's amazing,
by theologians. And preachers.
How many preachers?
But we've created a profile of a person that is the Christian songwriter. And it is a very narrow music palette and a very narrow theological bent and a very, I mean, the profile of this person and of these songs has about four or five bullet points to it, and that's all that's there. And you know what? Yes, every once in a while you need to drive through McDonald's and get a burger.
I did this morning.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not the diet you can live on.
And
you're going to be hungry again really, really quickly.
So if longevity and real worship is, it's authentic, write it, experience it. But that doesn't make it appropriate for corporate worship.
No, exactly.
And I think there's a difference.
All right. So I read this quote recently, and because I can't remember who it was that said it, I'm just going to say it's me.
That's your usual
practice. When I use it next week, I'll say it was me.
But worship in the Bible is personal. It's immensely personal, but it is not private.
Yep.
It is not private. Worship is not private. It's personal, but it's not private. So if you're a worship leader who's also writing songs, you've got to somehow get outside of your writing self.
Right.
And plan and lead worship that is not private, but it's corporate in the way that it is expressed and written in a way that has meaning to the entire body of Christ, not just to the few people who resonate with the song itself.
I don't remember one solo in Revelation.
That's funny.
That's good.
That's funny. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and hearing you talk, Dave, you brought this up. I think there are dangers, Mike and Dave, both on both sides of the spectrum. One is the songs being too empty, too vapid, too simple, both musically and lyrically. But in this age of kind of the new theological focus, pastors having more and more of a real desire to know what their church is singing, some of these modern hymns that are being written, there's a danger on the other side that it's too focused theologically and not enough artistically, and you're not able to implant that word on your heart because it doesn't have some of the melodic hooks or some of the poetry that's necessary, some of the imagery. And I think we've stumbled on both sides. I've heard some songs that really would be great. A great Bible study, and there are really, really horrible songs.
Which leads us back to craft.
You
can have
that's
both.
I'll tell you somebody that was a hymn writer that most people don't realize was a hymn writer, Charles Spurgeon.
Yeah,
one of the great theological minds the church has ever had.
Right,
but his songs were pretty bad.
They were
theological, but nobody could sing them, and nobody wanted to.
Yeah.
And so that to
your
point,
you co-wrote with him, didn't you?
No, exactly. No,
it was his
not
first
exactly.
ministry of music. Yeah.
So Dave, this is a fascinating subject. Let's talk just a little bit to that church songwriter, that worship leader who is shepherding a community of people that are starting to write songs. And by the way, I think that's a wonderful thing for a worship community to do together.
Absolutely.
Write songs. Not if you go into that thinking we're gonna become Gateway. We're gonna become Hillsong. We're gonna become Elevation Church. these great church ministries that have creative communities, and you pursue that, I want to say, oh, you're not going to get there that way. That right. doesn't work right. like that. What you need to be is who you are,
yeah.
and let God do that yeah. part. So first of all, check your motive at the door. Are you really writing for your community, or do you want to just be a songwriter that gets published and, yeah. and creates a name for yourself? So get past that hurdle. Now we're writing for the sake of our community. It's a spiritual experience. Whether or not anybody but us ever sing it, we'll let God take care of that, but we want to write songs. What are the two or three or four things that come to your mind that you would coach a writing community and a local worship ministry as they are starting to approach songs? What would you coach them? What should they be thinking about to have a community that's writing songs that can matter?
Well, you know, it's a good question. I think for every church it's different because, you know, one of the things is, can you do that song and know that it worked without them knowing you wrote it?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a great test.
And then another thing that I would say, that I'm probably doing these out of sequence, and I won't win you any friends here either, but on your podcast, I won't be invited back. But
this is the last time Dave's going to be on the road. No,
it was nice. I enjoyed it. I think one of the things, as we see this trend of more and more writers writing for their local church and more pastors, as you said, Brian, wanting writers to come out of their church, then the churches sometimes are making the mistake of saying, we are a publisher.
Yeah.
And I think if I was coaching a young writer, I would say, before you commit to them being your publisher, make sure they understand what a publisher is and because when the writer releases yeah. it, then you need to know that somebody's going to do that on your behalf.
Right.
And I'm not convinced that a lot of the churches are willing to take on that responsibility.
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk to that leader right now to say, hey, you've got a community of people around you that are writing songs, and you're thinking the church needs to own those songs. You need to really evaluate whether or not you are ready to be a publisher of those songs.
Right.
And what that means. And you might want to think about partnering with yes. a publishing company yes. to help.
Do you know one you'd recommend?
I don't have one. I think they ought to call you. But, but I mean, really, are you really being fair
yes.
to those people that are in your church and in a very well-intentioned way? Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can own my song. And you know in your heart
yeah.
that you're not really a publisher. And you're just owning
it. I get it that pastors say, well, yeah. hey, you're stealing the songs from my – or not – we use that word. They wouldn't.
Yeah.
You're getting your inspiration and you're writing on our clock. I get that.
Yeah.
But there needs to be a partnership.
There are some work for hire issues here, and we stumbled into a really practical subject mm-hmm. here. And this might be a podcast we ought to record sometime.
Yeah.
That if you're sitting in your office on the church's computer, on the church's piano, and you're writing songs all day, you probably want to do some investigation around the legalities of where that song ownership is.
Absolutely.
Because there are some laws in place here that protect the employer.
Yeah.
And that they do apply to songwriters. And I was grateful that years ago I had a lawyer in my church that helped me understand that and put some protections in place for me as a songwriter.
For both sides.
For both sides,
yeah.
No question about it. All right, so make sure you're don't confuse writing and publishing.
Right.
That'd be step one. What else would you say?
You know what? Just because you can sing in three octaves doesn't mean the worshiper out front can.
Yeah, exactly.
Amen.
Yeah.
And again, I'm diving into some things.
You're right.
I'm not going to be able to run for office
you're
now.
Right. You're
and
right.
And I would say to the pastor out there, you may have a great singer-songwriter in your church that sings in horrible keys for your congregation.
Yeah.
Just because they're a great singer-songwriter doesn't necessarily mean they're your worshiper.
You know, Brian, right. I know a book that has a chapter in it called Artists and Shepherds.
That's probably that's Worship Essentials by Mike
it's,
Carlin.
It's a, yeah, Worship Essentials. Yeah, yeah, that's a good book. Have you read that, Dave?
I have read that.
Oh, well, good. Yes. I've read your books, too, yes. so don't.
That's important. What about, Dave, are there any practical resources for me? As a young worship leader, and there was a time in my life many, many years ago where I thought I might write a few songs. And as I said before, the article points out, I was, like most human beings, starting anything out really, really terrible at it. What if I feel like I, you know, my community needs to be doing this? Maybe my pastor's put this on us and we're trying our best and we're just really terrible at it. I mean, are there some practical resources and places we can go to look to get better at the craft?
One of the best just pure songwriter conferences out there, and I don't have a dog in the hunt to recommend this, except I believe in it. It's called Write About Jesus. And it's
Write is spelled W-R-I-T-E. So if you want to look that up online,
Write About Jesus.
Yep.
And I teach there. Some of my favorite writers or teachers there. But it's just all about the craft. Mm. And, you know,
I've never been invited to teach at that conference.
Well, stick with me. I'll work it out. But, you know,
I've heard great things about it, though.
The other thing that, how many songs are you willing to write on your way there?
Yeah.
You know, I think Tony Wood recently was talking about a conversation with a writer that he said, are you willing, if I told you you were 20 songs away, what would you say? And they said, well, I'd write 20 more songs. He said, what if I told you you were 200 away?
Mm. Yeah.
And I, if we had time, we don't, and I won't, but the short version of it is when I moved here, I had a publisher when I was 17 that wanted to sign everything I'd written. I knew they weren't good enough.
Yeah.
I knew that wasn't the publisher for me. I wanted somebody, the publisher I ended up signing with, listened to everything I'd written. He said there was one line in one song that...
There you go.
I had the same experience when Niles Borup was my first publisher, and the first three songs I showed him, he said, I can't use any of those, but I would like to work with you and maybe help you learn some things about
songwriting.
There
was something there. The problem is, if you're a worship leader, you can say... I can bypass that.
You can.
I can skip the process.
Which ought to scare
you. My people liked it because they liked me.
Yeah, and it's
dangerous. That ought to scare you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking, Mike, just recently this illustration pops into my head. I was watching actually a golf tournament, and the announcer told the story of a guy was hitting one of the pros hitting balls in the range, and he heard someone watching him say, man, I'd give anything to hit a golf ball like that.
Oh, wow.
And apparently the professional golfer turned around and said, really? Would you quit your job?
Yeah.
Would you get up at 6 in the morning? Would you hit until your hands are covered in blisters?
Wow.
And tape those
that's
up
powerful.
And keep swinging and for 10 years? Because that's what it takes to hit a ball like that.
Yeah, isn't that something?
So before you say I'd give anything to write a song like that, make sure you know what you're talking
about. Brian, that may be the most powerful illustration I've ever heard you give. That's good.
Well, I don't know about songwriting, but being bad at golf, I'm very –
I've seen your swing. I know all about that swing.
I put on my Instagram a couple weeks ago, and I have just a writer's thing, just to encourage writers. But I put on there, I think last week maybe, it's not that writing comes easy to me. It's that's what I choose to work hard at.
Yeah. Well, I tell people all the time, the difference between a songwriter and somebody that just writes songs is a songwriter has a whole lot more wadded up pieces of paper in the corner in the trash can than somebody that just writes songs. Yeah. I mean, that's really true.
And the other difference I would add to that between a songwriter and a person that writes songs is a person that writes songs wakes up every day and decides, are they going to write a song? A songwriter doesn't have a choice.
Yeah, doesn't have a choice. Mm. They're always creating something. Well, I want to keep talking today, but I know this podcast needs to go out. We need to wrap this up. Although Tony Price probably has still got...
Someone who's working out and listening. We've helped him burn a few more calories.
Tony's probably got 3 or 4 miles left to go. He's my guy. You know, I call him out. But wrap us up, Brian. Yeah. But Dave, if you've got another extra minute, we'd like to keep talking to you about some other things. So.
We're going to continue to keep talking about songwriting. We'd love for you to write us, worship@lifeway.com, and let us know topics you'd like to hear Mike discuss and guests you'd like to hear... spring in. Also, tell us about your church and your community, what you're doing around the areas of songwriting, what you're doing to train your people, and what you're doing to get better at the craft. As always, let us know how we can pray for you. We want to do that personally and intentionally. So please write us, worship@lifeway.com. Please join us on the social media platforms, whatever your favorite is, be it Twitter or Facebook. And you can always join us as well on the blog, worshiplife.com, and interact with other worship leaders there. We'd love to meet some of you at some of our events. The Worship Life event in Gatlin is the last week in June, and then we've got other events around the country you can look for us. We'd love to meet you face to face.
By the way, you mentioned Worship Life.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, through the years, I've been a part of a lot of projects, but Dave Clark and I and Cliff Duren have a new Christmas musical that's coming from our friends at Littleness, and we're going to do a premiere of it at Worship Life.
Worship
we're at least
going to
read it if we're not premiering.
24th through the 27th of June.
Yeah.
And if I could put in one more plug, Don Cook and I are teaching a songwriting class at Worship Life
in Gatlinburg. So, if you're a songwriter hearing this, you need to register today.
And we haven't talked together in probably 20 years.
If it's less than 100 number ones, it's not much. A lot of number one songs came out of that songwriting duo there, so that's exciting. So, we'd love to see you at Worship Life, if not this year, next, or if not this venue, one of the other venues around the country. Look for Mike Harlan. You can go to MikeHarlan.com and find out where he's teaching and where he's going to be. Until next time, for Mike Harlan, this is Brian Brown saying thanks for joining us in the Worship Life podcast. We'll be back together to talk about worship music and church very soon.